there's a trail in the North Georgia mountains that I really like. One of those paths that winds upward through quiet trees until suddenly the world opens up. You step out onto the ridge and everything looks different. The air feels thinner. The horizon stretches wider. For a moment, you can see where you've been and where you're going. It's the kind of place where you breathe a little deeper and you think, I could stay here for a while. But of course you don't. Trails don't end on mountaintops. They always lead back down to the valley where the real walking happens. I imagine the Sermon on the Mount feeling something like that of the disciples. They had climbed with Jesus, listened to him, had him paint a picture of God's kingdom, a life built on mercy, on trust, on humility and courage and love. It must have felt like standing on a ridge with the world spread out before them, clear, compelling, and beautiful. And then Jesus ends with a challenge. It's not enough to hear these words. Build on them. Live them. We've just heard those words from Matthew 7, the call to be not only hearers, but doers, to build on rock rather than sand. But Matthew doesn't let us linger there on that mountain any more than a trail lets us stay on the ridge. The moment the sermon ends, Jesus steps off the mountain and back into a real world of people. Needs of people. Real needs. His teaching becomes action, calming, healing, feeding crowds, forgiving sins. The disciples follow him down the path, watching what those words look like in motion. And that's where our story takes us today. From one mountain where Jesus teaches, through the valley where he lives out that teaching, to another mountain where his glory is revealed. Between these two peaks lies the journey of faith, of hearing, of doing, and finally seeing. As we step off that imagined ridge with the disciples, Matthew lets us hear the last words Jesus speaks from the trail as it starts to turn downward. They are not soft words. They are not sentimental. They are words meant to settle into our bones. Not everyone who calls me Lord, Lord, will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father. It's as if Jesus is saying, don't mistake admiration for discipleship. Don't confuse enthusiasm with obedience. In Matthew's gospel, hearing and doing are woven together like threads in a soft cloth. You cannot pull one without unraveling the other. And then Jesus gives us a picture. Two builders, two houses, one storm. Both builders hear his words. Only one acts on them. And when the winds rise, the difference becomes clear. The crowds listen that day. They are astonished. They've heard teachers before, but not like this. Jesus speaks with an authority that feels like bedrock, solid, trustworthy, unmoving, the kind of authority you can build a life on. And that sense of authority becomes the thread Matthew wants us to follow. Because the moment Jesus finishes speaking, the moment the echo of his words fade on that mountainside, he turns and begins walking down the trail. And the disciples, they follow him into the valley, into the world, into the places where his teaching become flesh and blood. So imagine disciples taking those first steps down the mountain behind Jesus. There's crisp from his sermon, the image of rock and sand still echoing in their minds. But the moment their feet hit the valley floor, the world presses in, people calling out, needs rising up, life happening at full speed. And this is where Matthew wants our eyes to stay for a moment, because everything Jesus taught on the mountain begins to take shape in the valley. In chapters 8 and 9, the disciples watch Jesus reach out and touch a man with leprosy, someone no one else would come near. They see him calm a storm that seasoned fishermen couldn't handle. They watch him forgive a paralyzed man before healing him, as if to say, your deepest wounds are not always the ones that people see. The Sermon on the Mount, mercy, trust, courage, compassion, is no longer just words. It's walking, it's breathing, it's happening right in front of the disciples. And then Jesus turns to them and says, now you go, heal, proclaim, serve. It's as if he hands them the trail map and says, you've heard my teaching. You've seen my life. Now step into it yourselves. Hearing becomes doing. Doing becomes participating. But the valley is not all miracles and clarity. Questions rise like fog. John the Baptist sends words from prison. Are you really the one? The Pharisees challenge Jesus at every turn. Crowds press in with curiosity, not always with understanding. Even the disciples whisper among themselves, trying to make sense of this man they're following. The question beneath all the questions is, who is this? And then, after feeding thousands with a few loaves, after walking on water, after healing and teaching and challenging, Jesus turns to his closest friends. Who do you say I am? And Peter answered, you are the Messiah, the Son of the living God. It's a moment of clarity, like a break in the clouds. But even then, their understanding is only partial. Jesus begins to speak of suffering, of rejection, of a cross that they cannot yet imagine. And so, after all this, after the teaching, the healing, the questions, the confession, Jesus leads three of them up another mountain. Because something, when the valley becomes confusing, God gives us a higher place to go and to stand. After all that valley walking, after all that healing, the questions, the crowds, the moments of wonder, and the moments of confusion, Jesus does something unexpected. He turns to three of his disciples, Peter, James, and John, and invites them on yet another climb. Whatever they're expecting, it isn't what happens next. Because something, when the valley becomes confusing, God gives us a higher place to stand. Sometimes the only way to see the truth is to climb. And so they follow Jesus up the mountain, not knowing that this climb will change everything, not knowing that the one they've watched, the one who has healed and taught and forgave, is about to shine with a glory they have never imagined. Not knowing that the question they've been carrying, who is this, is about to be answered in a way that will leave them breathless. Before we reflect on what they see, let us hear from Matthew 17, verses 1 through 9. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and his brother John and led them up a high mountain by themselves. And he was transfigured before them. And his face shone like the sun, and his clothes became bright as light. Suddenly there appeared to them Moses and Elijah talking with him. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Lord, it is good for us to be here. If you wish, I will set up three tents here, one for you, one for Moses, and one for Elijah." While he was still speaking, suddenly a bright cloud overshadowed them, and a voice from the cloud said, "This is my son, beloved, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." When the disciples heard this, they fell to the ground and were overcome by fear. But Jesus came and he touched them, saying, "Get up and do not be afraid." And when they raised their eyes, they saw not one, not Moses, not Elijah, no one except Jesus himself alone. As they were coming down the mountain, Jesus ordered them, "Tell no one about the vision until after the Son of Man has been raised from the dead." If the disciples thought they were climbing the mountain to rest, the moment Jesus is transfigured before them shatters every expectation. One moment he looks like the teacher they've walked with for months, dusty feet, familiar face, the same hands that have touched the sick and lifted the weary. And then suddenly he is radiant. His face shines like the sun. His clothes blaze with a light no earthly bleach could ever imagine. It's as if the veil between heaven and earth grows very thin. And for a heartbeat, they see Jesus as truly what he is. Not just the teacher on the first mountain, not just the healer in the valley, but the one whose glory has been there all along, hidden in plain sight. And then Moses and Elijah appear, the law of the prophets, the whole story of Israel standing beside Jesus. Imagine what that felt like for those three disciples. Everything they've ever known about God's story is suddenly gathering on that mountaintop, pointing towards the one they've been following. It's as if the entire history of God's people is whispering, "This is the one you've been waiting for." Peter, bless him, tries to hold on to that moment. "Lord, it is good for us to be here," he says. And who really can blame him? When you're standing in glory, when the world finally makes sense, when the light is so bright it warms your bones, of course you want to stay there. Of course you want to build something permanent. Of course you want to freeze that moment in time. But then the cloud descends and the voice speaks, the same voice that spoke at Jesus' baptism, but now with a command. The voice says, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." Listen to him, not just admire him, not just follow him with a path of ease. Listen. The disciples fall to the ground in fear, because glory is beautiful, but it is also overwhelming. And then comes one of the most tender moments in all of Scripture. Jesus walks over, touches them, and says, "Get up and do not be afraid." When they lift their eyes, the dazzling light is gone. Moses and Elijah are gone. The cloud has been lifted, and there is Jesus. Only Jesus standing with them in the quiet. The glory fades, but the relationship remains. The radiance disappears, but the companionship endures. And Jesus leads them back down the mountain, because the work of love, the work of mercy, the work of healing is waiting in that valley. The transfiguration is not an escape from the world. It is a glimpse of who walks with us as we return to it. As the disciples follow Jesus back down the mountain, I imagine them walking slowly, glancing over their shoulders, trying to hold on to the light that they've just seen. How do you go back to ordinary life after witnessing something like that? How do you return to dusty roads and hungry crowds when you've just stood in the radiance of God? But that's what exactly where Jesus led them, back into the valley, back into the world, back into the places where people hurt and hope and hunger, because the transfiguration isn't meant to pull them out of life. It's meant to prepare them for it. And when we look at Matthew's gospel through this journey, we begin to see a pattern forming a rhythm of discipleship that still stands today and shapes us. On the first mountain, Jesus teaches. In the valley, Jesus acts. On the second mountain, Jesus is revealed, teaching, doing, seeing. These moments aren't separate chapters. They're one unfolding story. You can't understand the teaching without watching how Jesus lives. You can't understand the works without knowing who he is. And you certainly can't understand who he is without hearing the voice. This is my son. Listen to him. The Jesus who calls us to build our lives on rock is the same Jesus who walks with us in the shadow and in the light. The same Jesus who touched the frightened disciples touches us. The same Jesus who said, "Do not be afraid," speaks the words into our storms, into our questions, and into our valleys. And here we stand. One last Sunday before Lent, feeling that familiar mixture of anticipation and hesitance. Lent always asks something of us. It asks us to look honestly at our lives. It asks us to loosen our grip on what is comfortable. It asks us to walk with Jesus towards places we would rather avoid. Places of surrender, places of truth, places where we discover who we are and who God is calling us to become. There is a part of us that longs for it. The clarity, the renewal, the deeper grounding in God's love. And there is a part of us that resists it. Because valleys, they can have shadows, and the journey could be long. But this is why the transfiguration comes now, right here on the thresholds of Lent. Before we take a single step into the wilderness, Jesus gives us a glimpse of glory. Before we face the hard questions, he shows us who walks beside us. Before we enter the valley, he lets us stand on the mountain and hear the voices that says, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." The disciples came down the mountain changed, not because they stayed in the glory, but because the glory stayed in them. And that is the gift we carry into Lent. As we move into the season ahead, may we remember the mountains where Jesus taught us to live. May we remember the mountain where he showed us who he is. And may we walk the valley between them with courage, listening to him, trusting him, following him, until the light we glimpsed on the mountaintop becomes the light we carry into the world. Amen.